Leading Ideas Talks is brought to you by the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary in Washington, D.C. Subscribe free to our weekly newsletter at www.churchleadership.com/leading ideas. Has stewardship become a dirty word in your congregation? In this episode, stewardship consultant C.C. Delph Sherman speaks with Lewis Center Associate Director Ann Michael about cultivating generosity through simple practices of gratitude and sharing the good that money can do in the church and the world.
I'm Ann Michael, Associate Director of the Lewis Center for Church Leadership of Wesley Theological Seminary. I'm the editor of Leading Ideas e-newsletter, and I am pleased to be the host of this Leading Ideas Talks podcast. I'm talking today with C.C. Delph Sherman, who's a stewardship consultant to the Oregon-Idaho Annual Conference of the United Methodist Church. You may know her from her weekly blog, Inspiring Generosity, Changing the Church's Attitudes Toward Money. I've been a big fan of her work for a long time. It's both very practical, and she's really kind of a breath of fresh air when it comes to stewardship issues. So I want to welcome you, C.C.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I am always excited to talk stewardship with another stewardship person. But you know what I've discovered, and I bet you've discovered it too, that not everybody likes talking about it as much as we do.
How is that?
I know. It's shocking, isn't it?
It's totally shocking.
Yeah, but I think it really points to a more underlying problem, and that is that I think we've really allowed stewardship to kind of become a dirty word, something that nobody really wants to talk about in the church. So I wanted to talk with you today about how we could move beyond that toward a more positive mindset and some more positive practices when it comes to money and giving in the church. But I thought I could begin by asking you, how do you think we've gotten in this place where stewardship is that thing that nobody wants to talk about?
Well, I think it could have a lot. I mean, I think there are a variety of reasons. One is, you know, like your family of origin, what you were told about money when you were growing up. So, for instance, in my family, money was a pretty, unless you were saving your money and almost hoarding it, you know, because money was security. That was the only time you talked about it. And my parents definitely came from that greatest generation where they grew up without money. So the thought of generosity, I mean, they were generous to me, and as their only child, they were definitely generous to me. But thinking about giving money away to somebody else, that was a total, like, disconnect. They couldn't figure that out, because, or just, that was a very difficult concept for them. So I think that's one area, is like the family of origin. The second was just the whole televangelist, especially in the church. I think this is where it became a dirty word in the church, when you had a lot of televangelists and still out there, the prosperity gospel people, you know, just saying, if you send me some money, your problems will go away. And so somehow the church internalized that and just said, okay, it's all or nothing. Either, if I talk about money, it's going to come off terrible, because it's going to come off as begging. It's going to seem terrible. And if I start talking about money, people are going to associate me with a televangelist or a prosperity gospel person. And I don't want to have any association with that. So I think, I mean, to me, that's the two, those are the two areas. That's how I think we got to this. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there are other things, but those are the two primary things that how I think we got into this situation.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there are some other mistakes that are commonly made in churches around stewardship ministry that reinforce those negative attitudes?
Well, I think the biggest one is not talking about money.
Right.
So
the conspiracy of silence. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that, you know, if I don't talk about it, then it's not going to be, nobody's going to criticize me. Mm-hmm. And so then money becomes shrouded in secrecy, which I just think is, you know, I mean, that's not what God calls us to have, our money shrouded in secrecy. It is a part of our spiritual discipline and practice to be able to give to God what is owed to God, which is everything. And so I think this whole, or the, you know, I've had clergy come up to me and say, well, my congregation doesn't want me to talk about it. So therefore, and that could be two or three people have said, please, you know, I don't like talking about money in church. So then it's projected that everyone doesn't think they, you know, we should be talking about money in church.
Right.
So, yeah.
So I think too, sometimes what I see happen in churches is that the only time they talk about money is during an appeal. So you'll have the one stewardship sermon on Commitment Sunday, and so anything related to stewardship becomes associated in people's mind with the church asking for money instead of there being a larger conversation that it's a part of.
Right, and so then it feels awkward, and usually by that point, the clergy person feels awkward about asking for money because it's only happening once a year, mm-hmm. or they're only talking about it once a year. So I think that awkwardness and that feeling uncomfortable about talking about money is projected from the pulpit because, you know, they're doing it once a year. And it's kind of, and I also see this, like, I'm really sorry that I have to come to you to ask for money today, but this right. is how
so
our
it's,
church
it's done apologetically.
Oh yeah. my gosh. Yeah. yeah. I mean, it's like, well, we have the heat we have to keep on and we have lights to keep on. God, I just like, oh my gosh. And I mean, and the other thing is that I've seen clergy people not want to talk about money because they're embarrassed because some of that money goes to pay their salary.
Right. So they're afraid of appearing self-interested.
Right. As opposed to, okay, I'm about ministry. I'm about, you know, what you are doing is not only a spiritual practice, but you are giving to ministry to happen in this church and you want ministry to happen. I'm merely a part of it. You know, I'm merely a part of that ministry that's happening in the vast scheme of things. But, you know, so anyway, that's the other part that I see that happens.
Yeah, so limiting it really to sort of that pay the bills mentality that some people talk about.
That crushes my spirit because that, I mean, you know, that who, nobody, I mean, I don't like to pay my electric bill, but you know what? I really enjoy having a home that has lights. I enjoy having a home that I can see things and, you know, so if you limit what you're doing to these, like really like the lighting bill, the water bill, the picking up the garbage, I mean, as opposed to what we're giving to is ministry and the church is where ministry happens. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, looking at the lights and the water and the electricity and the garbage, all part of ministry because we want to have the most welcoming, open place that we can for people to come to and receive the love of God that they need to get.
So having it be about the vision and the ministry of the church as opposed to sort of a narrow focus on we've just got to pay the bills,
yeah.
which is so, I mean, so institutionally centered. I mean, you know, it seems like in these days people have such an anti-institutional bias that if it's all linked to institutional maintenance, it's such a harder sell.
Right. And I think that goes back to generational stuff because at one point, you know, it's sort of, if you talk to the older generation, the greatest generation, you know, they were brought up thinking that you give to the church out of obligation because that's what you're required to do. That's what you're supposed to do. Well, now, I mean, the boomer generation, Gen X, you know, they don't buy into that. That money is an obligation to the church is just not what it is. I mean, they want to be giving to something that they believe in, that they believe in the mission, that they are part of something greater than themselves.
Yeah. Now, I think that's so true. And yet at the same time, I know, and this isn't true just in the church, this is true in other nonprofits too. I mean, you do have to pay the bills. And so, you know, I can remember a young couple in our church who was unhappy about how much of the church's budget went to support the building. And they felt very uncomfortable about making a large gift because they said, we just don't want to have to pay all that money to go into the building. And I said to them, how much of your household budget goes to pay for your mortgage and your household expenses? You know, I mean, anybody who has a place to land in the world, it costs money.
One thing about this giving out of, you know, like I'm giving to the building, and I understand that the lights and the electricity all need to be paid for. But I also think that that's the benefit of doing more of a narrative budget, where you're explaining the story of the church so that, people can see that the lights, the electricity, all that stuff pays for ministry to happen, mm-hmm. that the building is your ministry. So, I think that's a really important piece that, you know, we tend to just, you know, people see this budget and they're like, oh, it's all about the building or it's all salaries, but we have to, I think it's a reframing that, and that's the responsibility of the clergy and the finance committee to really help paint the story of what the church does. And
Cece, for people who might not be familiar with the concept of a narrative budget, could you say a bit more to describe what you mean by narrative budget?
Sure. Sometimes it's actually instead. I mean, I really think it's not a good idea just to sort of say, here's our budget and I'm going to send it out with the appeal letter, with the stewardship letter, and it's all these numbers. I mean, nothing is more, I don't know. I know some people want to have that and they should have access to it. But I think the majority of people want to know the story of the church. And mm-hmm. so when you send out a narrative budget, you're telling the story of what your money is going to, as opposed to line items. It's the general, and it helps with the vision. It helps with everything about what you're doing for the church. It's more words, less numbers.
Okay, and maybe more pictures and images as well. Some of the ones that I've seen are really beautiful. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the other practices that can help promote a more healthy culture around money and giving?
Well, the two that I really focus on, so I'll start by saying that one of my favorite stewardship books is called Ask, Thank, Tell by Charles Lane. Mm-hmm. It's an oldie, but it's definitely, still in the, one of the classics, I think, in helping. And so he says, ask, thank, tell. And I like to say that you start out by doing thank, tell, and then ask.
Right.
And primarily, and this is where, a lot of my work has gone through nonprofits, local nonprofits. And local nonprofits are so jealous of churches, primarily because they get to ask every single week.
Right. And they have their constituents sitting right in front of them.
They have their constituents right there. Mm-hmm. And every week they're going, and now will the ushers come forward to receive our tithes and offerings? I mean, now, if my local nonprofit could do that, they would be drooling to be able to do that. Right. So I always try and remind clergy that they already have part of this ask thing down because they do it every week. So what they have less under their belt is the ability, the knowledge of how to do thanking and telling mm-hmm. really well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sense that this is where, because of the uncomfortableness people feel around money, they don't talk about what the money goes to, or they do very little thanking for giving.
Right.
I always like to talk about my pastor. When he first came to our church, he started telling us, he started reframing our story or telling us our origin story. And which I'm a church in Salem that's been around for over 175 years now. And he started telling us our history of our church and what it meant to our community. So, we kind of started sitting up a little bit more and feeling a little bit better about ourselves because it's a pretty important church. And then almost every week he would say something like, this is a generous congregation. This congregation, and he would just say something and he would mention mm-hmm. the way in which we had been generous. And I started thinking, wow, if he thinks we're generous, well, maybe we should start acting generous. You know, I mean, just
yeah. So he was naming a reality for you to live into.
Absolutely, yeah. And part of it is because he was recognizing what our contributions, both all our volunteer work, all our spiritual prayers, and our financial resources, what an impact it had had on the church, you know, in the past and now. I mean, he would point out certain things every week and say, you know, the work that you're doing with homeless people in the community, it's, I mean, what a generous congregation.
Yeah, so that's the telling piece, telling the story of people's generosity in action.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then, I mean, and then the thanking piece, I think, is also really critical because, for a long time, our church would have our quarterly statements would come out, and it looked like the church, you know, the church had gone to a bank and printed out statements.
Or that they were sending a bill.
Yeah. Oh, like sending a bill. Like and that, in fact, yeah. some of it would say still due or right. Something that I'm just like, it just left a bad taste in your mouth. And we started doing something which was so simple, was just adding a third of a page with actually some of it was a testimony of what, you know, it was a combination of thanking and telling, which is often what happens with telling your story. You're thanking people. But we would also just, it would tell a story of somebody that had been impacted by the church mm-hmm. and what impact it had and how they were so thankful for the church. Mm-hmm. And then it made you feel pretty good that you were giving to the church.
Right. So that's going out with your quarterly statements. So that's one of the ways that you're thanking people. What are some other approaches to the thank you piece? Because I think churches do so neglect that. And part of it is because of the conspiracy of silence around money. I mean, if you can't talk about what people give, there's no transparency or no knowledge, it's really hard to say thank you.
Right, right. So I think there are a couple of other things that are, I mean, they, and all these things, I mean, let me just say they take time, right? I mean, yeah. this isn't just something, I mean, so I think if you're looking to increase generosity in your church and you're going to try and do it without investing any time of your own time or effort into it, it's not going to work because it does take a little bit of time.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you a couple of things. So around a holiday time, around Christmas or particularly when people aren't expecting it, around Valentine's Day, St. Patrick's Day, or even April Fool's Day, to send out a thank you, a sweet thank you, or just a way that you know, I remember a clergy person sent out little Valentine's cards, and they weren't even personalized, but I mean, as to Dear John or Dear Mary, but she wrote on every little card, you know, just a little bit, a different note, and passed them out after a service one Sunday. And people were just so touched by that and surprised. And to me, the better part, what happened was she wrote back to me and she said, you know, I found myself loving my congregation again. We did one at the Ad Council meeting, at our administrative council meetings, where people took five different church members that were regularly giving. They each got five names. They wrote, a thank you for your generosity and for your faithful giving. We prayed for you tonight and thanked God for you tonight. Like it was a three-line note.
Wow.
And we did pray for them and we did thank God for them. And people were just like, wow. it's just that sort of a surprise because to me, in one hand, that's so awesome. And yet it also shows like, wow, I mean, we don't do it enough and the impact of doing those little things.
Mm-hmm. Well, since you mentioned that some of this does take time, it certainly takes attention and intention to begin to implement some of these practices. I think one of the things that I struggle with in my congregation is that, you know, there's just so much bandwidth. There's only so many time, you know, so many minutes in a worship service. There's only so much ink in the newsletter. There's only so much time that the staff and leaders have to spread across so many different things that it's almost not possible to implement all the good ideas around stewardship that a consultant like you might think about. So what do you think are some of the things that are most important to start with?
So with the clergy, I think, to me, there are two things that they could do. And when I have this thing I like to call a stewardship calendar, mm-hmm. That says here's something that you can do. Here are some things that you can do every month, and you can either, check them off, or you're like, okay, that's too much. But the two things that I always say that I think that are really critical is that perhaps every Monday morning, the clergy person, sits down and they write three thank you letters, just three lines. I mean, it doesn't have to be a lot, but three thank you letters to people in their congregation, just to even start that notion of gratitude. So that's one thing. And then the second thing is what I mentioned before, was that every week, I think you need to thank the congregation, and it's thanking and telling at the same time, and mention one of the ministries that's happening in the church that can only happen because people are so generous with their financial resources.
Right. Well, those are two great ideas because they're so specific and they don't take a whole lot of time. I mean, but it's just a matter about instituting getting in the habit of that. Of that simple practice.
Right.
To me, a large part of this question has to do with theology. I've spent a lot of time, I teach stewardship here at Wesley Seminary. I spend a lot of time working with my students around theology of stewardship. And I think, so often the theological lenses that people bring to this, It's all talking about the biblical concept of stewardship, which, for people that have lived in the church their whole life, they know what it means. But people who maybe are newer or less don't really understand stewardship from a biblical perspective. There's talk about tithing, which, again, people outside the church, that's a very, very unfamiliar language. And I'm always encouraging people to think more broadly about generosity in scripture and how God uses generosity. I think shifting the theological language that we use sort of helps move us away from obligation, because stewardship and tithing, they come across as legalistic and obligation. Whereas when you start talking about generosity and gratitude, it's just such so much more gracious conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. And, and I think people understand, I've read Mike Slaughter's book, The Christian Wallet, but what I love about that book is the title alone, The Christian Wallet, because I think if we think about all that we have and all that we are owned by God, I mean, that really starts shifting the picture. And for me, for years, I went to a church there in Washington, D.C. called Church of the Savior, and we had a liturgy that we did every week. And every week before the offering, we would say, God is the owner, I am the ower. And it, I would say I went to that church for 5 years before I moved. And it took me like 4.5 years to start really internalizing that concept. And to me, that is so powerful as a Christian to be thinking, God is the owner of everything and I am the ower. And to me, that's the overall theology.
Right.
Is if I can remember that my wallet doesn't really, really belong to me, it belongs to God. And so how do I use my God-given resources to exemplify the love of Jesus in this world?
Well, and I think it's interesting, too, that you said how long it really took for you to internalize that understanding, because I think a lot of people don't appreciate, because the beliefs that Christians have about money and generosity are so countercultural. I mean, our culture teaches us that we deserve what we have. And so to get people to move from that into a mindset that they acknowledge that God is the owner and they are the ower, it takes a lot of reinforcement. It's something we have to be talking about and integrating into our practices constantly. So as someone who spends a lot of time on stewardship, what's new or exciting to you right now? Are there any new trends or possibilities or ideas that that are capturing your attention or that you think have promise?
I work in stewardship and I work a lot in the nonprofit world. And what I see is, more of the attention being on the donor and what we call donor love, and thinking about how getting the people in the pews and then in other nonprofit organizations to see how they are an active participant in what's happening in the organization, and in this case, in the church.
Right.
Because I think people can often come to church and they're kind of, they're engaged in worship, but it can also feel very passive if that's the only time that they come to church. Now, we hope that everybody's far more engaged than that, and they're going to small groups and they're going to Bible studies, but they may not be. And so how that, to me, that was a big, there's a great, her name is Penelope Burke, who sort of started this whole donor-centered fundraising. And, you know, how do we make the people in the pews feel engaged with what's happening in the church? And understand, you know, and so to me, that goes back to the clergy person being willing to say, or having, you know, somebody, a lay person every week coming up and saying, here's what your gifts are doing in the world, and this is the difference that it's making.
Yeah.
So to me, that's kind of exciting. You know, the whole electronic giving, we've still got a lot of people that are working on trying to engage with getting younger people to give via credit cards in the church. That's mm-hmm. That's something in a lot of rural churches, they just can't do that sort of stuff. So that's really more for the medium-sized to larger churches. And I will say that if you engage in electronic giving, I think it's great. Do not just think it's going to be the millennials that are going to want to use it. One of the people in our church, every week he comes up and designates. He's about 85 years old.
Oh, wow.
And designates to a different, I mean, they just loves the technology. Huh. So if they understand, you know, thinking that the only people that want electronic giving are the quote unquote younger people, it's not true. So
yeah, one of the things I think that's interesting about electronic giving too is that, you know, once you have a foothold with being able to accept contributions electronically in some way, then it sort of begs the question, then how do we use electronic communication to invite people to give? Because, you know, I mean, in this world, you know, so many of the sophisticated fundraising appeals that you get are multimedia, they're through social media, they're,
yeah.
And most churches I know haven't quite figured out how to do that well, but there's such a potential there. You know,
yeah.
if they could figure out better how to reach people through the communication methods that people are most connected to today.
Well, I think there's two things too. I'll just put in a plug for paper. Research in the fundraising development world has shown that paper is still going to outperform electronic giving in a vast majority, a percentage of the time. So
yeah, it's not an either or for sure. Yeah.
It's not an either or. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you want, I mean, I was just, working with a clergy person and he was only going to send out an electronic piece of mail with a, you know, with a link to mm-hmm. the, where you could give. But I suggested that, you know, if he could, he should send paper in addition to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if he couldn't do that, then he send to his top 20 givers, because a letter is going to hang around a lot longer
right.
than an email that shows up and then people kind of tune it out immediately.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I just want to make sure I put in a plug for, you know, paper has not gone away.
Yeah.
And
that's a very good thing to remember. Yeah. And especially when you think about what a high percentage of dollars in churches tends to come from older generation people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's who's mostly, even in the general nonprofit world, that's who's generally, it's somebody who reads the mail, is somebody who's in their 70s, 65 and up. Mm-hmm. And they are interested in what you have to say. And they're less interested in sort of like looking at the electronic. And I mean, they may give that some look, but it's very different than getting mm-hmm. something in the mail that you can hold on
right.
to.
Yeah. Or that personal, you know, I mean, personal is always the gold standard. To draw this to a close, I wanted to ask kind of a vision question. And, you know, a lot of times I think congregations, and this makes sense, it's logical, they have kind of an incremental approach to this. They, you know, they do a little bit here, they do a little bit there, a new idea pops up, you know, and hopefully they're moving in the right direction. But I also think sometimes it's helpful to have a vision of what you're aiming for. And so, I mean, if you could kind of paint a picture of a congregation that really did have a healthy stewardship culture, what would be some of the things that you would see in a church like that?
Well, culture change is not easy. So I'm going to say that right off the bat. If you're part of a church that has been embarrassed about asking for money or reticent or it's a silent topic, it's going to take some work to change that that culture. And so for me, my primary thing is you figure out the why you exist. If you exist just to exist, that's not very inspirational. And that's, I mean, not many people are going to want to give to that. Not many people are going to want to come to your congregation. If you don't have a sense of why you are a congregation and what God is calling your particular congregation to do in your community. So that's one really key thing. The second thing in changing the culture would be to make sure that you have a strong scriptural and spiritual understanding of, you know, what's that. And that may require doing a congregational study around a book like, you know, The Christian Wallet, something that's fairly simple. Or So I would suggest doing that and finding out those scriptures that are really important. To change the culture is about wanting to be joyfully generous, that this is not something that somebody's yanking you out having to do, but you are excited about what your congregation is doing, not only internally as a focus of worship, but externally, how it's making a difference in the world. It really is creating that vision of who you are and how money can make such a positive difference in the world.
Yeah.
And then that, to me, that's where the joy comes from, is that you feel confident in where your money is going. You know that God is using it in a really great way. And you know that you are blessing others as a result.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing, I think, is that the vision for a congregation that's healthy in terms of stewardship is very intricately connected to a congregation that has a clear sense of vision overall, understands
right.
why it's doing what it's doing and the difference that it makes, and can help people understand how they relate to that.
Right. Who you are. I mean, that is really critical. Who you are as a congregation will help you will get you on the right trajectory right off the bat, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, Cece, I'm grateful to you. As I said, I'm a big fan of your work. You've been so generous in sharing a lot of your ideas with our readers of Leading Ideas and now with our listeners of our podcast. So I want to thank you for taking the time to talk to us today.
Leading Ideas Talks has been brought to you by the Optimizing Annual Financial Campaigns Video Toolkit. Did you know that congregations that seek annual financial commitments have significantly higher levels of overall giving? Learn best practices to make your annual financial campaign more effective with Optimizing Annual Financial Campaigns, available at churchleadership.com/shop. On the next episode of Leading Ideas Talks, Bishop Robert C. Wright of the Episcopal Diocese of Atlanta and Lewis Center Director Doug Poe share insights for leading struggling congregations through change.
We have to ask ourselves, do we love these people? I think that it may sound cute or trite, but I think that any change that can really happen comes at least in part, and I would say lion's share, if the people get a sense that you are genuine in your affection. Paul says that, be genuine in your affection. And I think that ends up being the conduit for some of the work that we can do in the congregation. And so we offer the word, understanding that we only have part of truth, always only part. and that there's as much truth sitting out there in front of us in the congregation. And so we hold our part gently. We occupy our authority gently. And so we've got to really do our own soul searching about how we correct. And sometimes the preacher is the one who can learn the most from the people about how to be gentle in correction.
Thank you for joining us. And don't forget to subscribe free to Leading Ideas at churchleadership.com/leadingideas.